I'll do the title. It's Uncertainty and Sensitivity Analysis for Rich Zone Water Quality Model Test at USGS Field Sites. And I do want to mention the collaborators. We've had many. A lot of people contributed to this work, and Lodge in particular. Thanks so much for creating an ideal environment for collaboration between our agencies. It was very welcoming and friendly, fostered exchange of ideas, and it's just been great. It's been a lot of fun. Our agencies have worked together on these projects for over 10 years now, I guess, so I think that's really something. So thanks for that. I'm with USGS, and why is USGS interested in the unsaturated zone? Well, we typically run groundwater models, as you're probably aware, modflow models, looking at transported contaminants to some receptor, like a well or a stream over here. But what about the vadose zone? We haven't done that so well in the past, and we have questions about over broad areas, modflow scales. What are the water fluxes at the top of the water table? What is the fraction of mass applied that leaches down to the top of the water table? These then can be used to improve simulations of fate and transport to the receptor. So that's why we're interested in the unsaturated zone. And fortunately, we met Lodge and Lee Wong and others. And I know I'm preaching to the choir here in terms of unsaturated zone complexity. There's a lot going on here with nitrogen inputs and transformations. And this is something that these quantities, the USGS, does not measure very well. So we really needed a model. We were thrilled to find out about the root zone water quality model around 2003, 2004, and even more thrilled when we contacted Lee Wong and Rob and Lodge, and they were quite willing to share their expertise on this model. So we're using it, USGS, to get nitrogen mass balances, for example. Our sites, I work for a national water quality assessment program. We have 50 study units and principal aquifers nationwide, but in this time period here, 2003-2012, we undertook field-scale unsaturated zone experiments in select areas, such as California, Nebraska, and Maryland. And those are the sites that I'll be focusing on, where we applied the root zone model in collaboration with Lodge's shop for nitrogen mass balances. And today I'm going to talk about these two sites, and actually this is more of a pesticides application that I'll talk about today. The objectives of the root zone modeling for sites in Nebraska and Maryland, modeling of pesticides, was to predict transport and fate of metolachlor and degradates at these two sites. We wanted to estimate parameter importance based on reduction of prediction uncertainty, and we use certain tools for that, which I'll go into in a minute. And our data set was, I wish I could say it was a platinum data set, but unfortunately, sadly, it's probably a copper data set. So the data are sparse. They're incomplete. 1 year's worth of pesticide and degradate data at both of these sites. So the question for us was not traditional calibration and validation. The question for us was, are these data useful? So we wanted to estimate data worth by observation group, and I had the different groups here for Maryland and Nebraska. In Nebraska, there was no soil water retention data, and there was at Maryland. Both had pesticides, obviously. And do the available data, even though they're sparse, do they reduce prediction uncertainty? So that's the direction that we took at these sites with this data set. So we use PEST parameter estimation software for auto-calibration of the root zone water quality model. We use truncated singular value decomposition to mitigate insensitive and interdependent parameters, and Tikhonov regularization to control overfit. That's putting a penalty on your objective function if your parameters stray too far, adjusted parameters stray too far from your starting values. So I'm not going to go into those details, but there's a couple of nice reports here by John Doherty, 2010, that go into the details of these procedures, including the uncertainty procedures. So we use a linearized Bayesian approach, which is efficient, approach for uncertainty and data worth. And this is these routines here are organized into a suite of utilities called GenlinPred. And the various specific utilities here get at prediction uncertainty for a single prediction of interest, parameter contributions to uncertainty reduction, which is kind of like a parameter sensitivity analysis, and also data contributions to uncertainty reduction. So that's how we use these utilities. It's a linearized Bayesian approach. This is the only equation I'm going to show. This is a variance here, and that is your uncertainty of your single prediction, and there's a prior component and a posterior component, pre-calibration and post-calibration. And the matrices that we're using here to do the analyses are the prior parameter covariance matrix is one we'll focus on, and also the Jacobian matrix or parameter sensitivity matrix. Now these are approximate. Linear methods are approximate, but they're pretty robust in terms of ordered relations, in terms of the importance of parameters, the importance of data groups. Those things tend to hold up pretty well, even if the linearity assumptions are violated. But the advantage is we're working with a single run of a calibrated model. It doesn't even have to be a calibrated model, but you have to have data. We're working with a single run of that model versus thousands or tens of thousands of runs for a full Bayesian approach. And we estimate this quantity pre and post calibration. And the parameter influence and data worth comes solely from manipulation of these two matrices here. So if you had a perfect knowledge of a parameter, for example, and you wanted to see how that affects your prediction uncertainty, then you just zero the variances and covariances for that parameter in this matrix. If you want to see the influence of a data group, what happens if you don't have that data, then you just zero those observations in the Jacobian matrix. So I'll just give you a flavor of the calibrations at Nebraska, and these are concentrations of metolachlor, ESA, and OXA, and a couple of different lysimeter depths, and you can see some early breakthrough of contaminant, even at deeper depths. It's interesting. But what I want to point out here is data gaps. So here's, we might be interested in a predicted peak, for example, from metolachlor, but we don't have an observation for that. So that's a data gap there, and there's data gaps here in terms of the time series, and this is all for a single year, 2004. So are the data useful? Well, so we use the utilities I described to get at parameter importance. This is the change in prediction uncertainty due to a parameter. The taller the bar, the more important the parameter. And we calibrate this change for the pre-calibration and post-calibration case. So pre-calibration, you can see that those changes in uncertainty are pretty high, up to about 23%. And this is the Maryland site, and the prediction of interest is maximum ESA concentration. Post-calibration, these changes are much smaller now. So these are small numbers that are normalized to the total variance. They're normalized, but what it's saying is if you've done a calibration and you want to reduce the uncertainty even more beyond that which has already been achieved by the data, then these are parameters here you would focus on. Now, I know you can't read these, but these are basically soil hydraulic parameters, things like water contents and field capacity, so on and so forth. The influence in the data is seen in the shift of the bars as you go from left to right. So post-calibration, if you want to reduce more uncertainty, like I said, beyond what you've already achieved, you'd be focusing on different parameters here, and these tend to be things such as pesticide properties, and it's a little hard for even me to read, but take my word for it, pesticide properties, KOC values, for example, and half-lives. And you see a similar shift in Nebraska. In a pre-calibration case, again, the soil hydraulic parameters tend to be more important than the others, with changes in uncertainty of up to 46%. And post-calibration, again, these are normalized, and the changes are smaller, but you can see that the types of parameters are shifting here to things such as there's one here. This is the lateral sortivity factor, which is a macro pore parameter, and this is a half-life here. As far as data worth at the two sites, there's two things going on here. The gray bars are the decrease in pre-calibration variance from addition of an observation group. So you're going from pre-calibration, you add an observation group, a single observation group, and you get a big shift or reduction in uncertainty up to 90% in the case of Nebraska. The dark bars, the black bars are that you've got all your data groups in play. What is the increase in post-calibration variance from removal of an observation group? So we're ranking these by the posterior case. And again, so with the black bars here, they're going to be kind of low in terms of increases because you still have other data in play, even though you've only removed a single observation group. Thanks. But we rank them here, and we see some interesting things, I think. So like I said, we had no soil hydraulic data measured at Nebraska. The nitrate, if you take this in terms as an importance measure, the higher the bar, the more important. It's number 3 out of 4 in terms of importance or observation group in Nebraska. And I'm wondering, is this a proxy, like a tracer almost, for the soil hydraulic data? Because at Maryland, we do have soil hydraulic data, and in terms of importance here, of observation groups, moisture is right up there, and nitrate is dead last. But the biggest changes we see in terms of reducing the uncertainty are going from the uncalibrated to the calibrated state, adding that single observation group. Post-calibration, removal of a single observation group is less critical to increases in prediction uncertainty. And again, that question does, if you don't have data and don't even have soil hydraulic data, can nitrate function at this one site as a tracer or a proxy? So let's just summarize here. Although the observed data are sparse, they substantially reduce prediction uncertainty associated with predicted maximum metolachlor or ESA concentration. And as far as parameter importance goes, the soil hydraulic parameters from these analyses had more influence, more importance on pre-calibration uncertainty reduction up to 46% at Nebraska, 23% at Maryland. The pesticide properties had largest reductions in post-calibration uncertainty, but those normalized changes were small. As far as data worth, the observation groups entered one at a time, reduced pre-calibration uncertainty by up to 90% at Nebraska and 96% at Maryland. Removal of those observation groups one at a time increased the normalized post-calibration uncertainty by rather small amounts. And again, Lodge, thanks. It's been really good. And thanks, everyone, for your attention. Any questions?
We have time for a couple questions.
Yes. Right, we did have nitrate. Mm-hmm.
In terms of prediction, now, what are the variables that would be useful to help with improving the
prediction? The predictions of nitrate?
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, we see a lot of the same ones. We have other papers that address just nitrate, and again, it's soil moisture, a lot of the soil hydraulic variables. And there is one called R45, I think, which is a shift of in pools. I have to go to Leewon, can probably tell me exactly what R45 is, but it's change in nutrients, I guess, going from one pool to the next. I just can't remember which two pools they are, but that one was very sensitive as well, so suggesting that some of the transformation type parameters would be of interest, that one in particular. But what was really driving it was the soil hydraulic parameters again, so we see that pretty consistently, both for nitrate as well as pesticides. And, yes. Yes, the gray bars, we remove was it the parameters or the observation groups? And here? Okay, thanks. Okay, right here. So we remove these one at a time after calibration. After calibration, we removed an observation group one at a time and looked at the increase in that predictive uncertainty, but the other groups were still in play. Going the other way, we had the prior uncertainty, and we added a group one at a time. That's the gray bars here. Only a single group. We added a single group, and those are reductions that we saw. So reductions in the case of gray bars and increases in the case of black bars.
Thank you. Okay, sure. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you.